Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main, side, and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. We finally got to hear from Canucks management today, Sat.
We did.
Yeah. And as we had come to know in the early part of his tenure, Jim Rutherford gives us a lot to talk about.
Lots.
I would never criticize the man for saying too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because people on this show, in our text inbox, they always ask for more transparency.
Yeah.
And I will give Jim Rutherford credit for that. He tries to give you as much as he possibly can whenever he does speak with the media.
Well, I mean, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I was going to say he doesn't give you anything to read between the lines, and he still ends up giving you something to read between the lines as well. So it's a bit of everything.
Yes.
When Jim Rutherford speaks.
If you are wondering, no, the Canucks have not yet acquired Jack and Luke Hughes yet.
Not
from
yet.
The New Jersey Devils.
Not yet.
But they are still playing in the playoffs, though. Jack is obviously hurt right
Jack
now.
Jack is not.
Yeah.
Jack is not.
Let's not talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. We will talk to Patrick Alvin about all this a little bit later on in the show. We get the exclusive interview with Patrick coming up just after 4:30. There is a lot to dive into, and we've got lots to get through and lots to follow up on with Patrick Alvin. But, you know, you finally get to hear from management, obviously disappointed with where this season has gone. Rutherford essentially saying that once they got to the point where they knew it wasn't going to work with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, they went from we're a contender to we're now a team in transition. It's not too far from what he said in the past when he spoke to the Globe and Mail. Yeah. And what Patrick has said since the JT Miller trade has happened.
Even what Quinn Hughes said, we're one or two players away.
Even what Quinn Hughes said. So it was kind of right there, but he laid it out for all. Like, yeah, once that happened, we didn't really consider ourselves a contender much anymore.
Yeah, which was the truth.
Yeah.
You know, you can still be a playoff team, but you're not a contender.
Yeah.
It was clear. Like, you lost your ceiling, and now it's the pursuit to regain your ceiling.
And that's where it gets interesting this offseason for the Vancouver Canucks. Let's bring in our next guest. He is our Monday Insider, and he is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. It is Frank Saravalli of Daily Faceoff. Thanks for this, Frank. It was, Jim Rutherford doesn't leave much to the imagination when he speaks to the media. What did you take away from the Canucks end-of-season news conference?
Oh, man, where to start?
Yeah.
Exactly as you saw, Jim Rutherford today is sometimes exactly how he is in person or on the phone. Blunt, engaging, fascinating, and full of insight. So there's a lot to unpack.
There truly is, right? And even on Rick Tocchet, he said a lot of positive things about Rick Tocchet, spoke about, you know, what a great job he did, and maybe in some ways a better coaching job this year than last year, given all the adversity that they had to face. But he also mentioned at the very end that, you know, he hopes that he accepts the offer, which is a historic offer for the Canucks because it's the most they've ever offered a head coach. So, like, do you feel better or worse about things with what he had to say about Rick Tocchet's situation?
I would say it's honestly neutral. There's a lot to sift through. It's not just about dollars and cents. It's also about trust. It's also about vision for the future. It's about the plan. And so all of those things get mashed together in these conversations. And I thought the most important and significant part of the press conference with regards to Rick Tocchet was about the idea or notion that the Canucks will not be holding Tocchet to the option year, which was one-sided. And that was sort of the rumbling behind the scenes the last few weeks, but I never got to a place where I was comfortable reporting it because I wasn't sure exactly what the Canucks were going to decide. But this thought process that it only makes sense to bring Rick Tocchet back on a longer-term extension, that's kind of the thought process that I've had the whole time. Why do you want to try and lock a guy in to an option when you can't come together on a longer term deal? It just doesn't really make sense for the future of the team. And so to have that part verbalized, I think was important, not just for the process, but also for Rick Tocchet moving forward.
Well, I guess the vision part of it too is, you know, how long is this transition period going to take for the Vancouver Canucks? Uh-huh. They seem pretty adamant that they want to be, you know, adding to this team this summer, making a big trade for a centerman. Because, you know, quite frankly, if Tocchet wanted to go to a team in transition, there's maybe other teams looking for a head coach right now that might be willing to offer him more than what the Canucks' best offer to mm-hmm. Rick Tocchet has been. Do you agree?
Yeah, and that's why I'm just not as sold that it's really going to come down to dollars and cents. Like, does he want to be paid appropriate to market? Sure. Is he looking for every last dollar? I've never gotten that vibe from Rick Tocchet in my whole life. And I've known him for a little while now. So, I don't think that's what's motivating him. I think what he wants is the ultimate chance to win. And I think he needs to be sold that in order to stay in Vancouver, that there is a clear path for that to happen. And it's not because he wants power or control. It's because he wants to work with people that he shares a vision with. And that part, I think, is what is really at the crux of this conversation is. And that brings us kind of exactly to Quinn Hughes and where that stands, because that became a whole thing today that I don't know necessarily needed to, in saying the quiet part out loud.
So what's the latest on the Canucks' quest to acquire the Hughes brothers then? Do you have anything on that?
Oh boy. I know others have said this. The NHL gave a very stern talking to general managers at the recent meeting in March, and they were all issued a very clear set of rules and guidelines. And in fact, they required general managers, I don't know if presidents were included, but to sign off and send back an acknowledgement with a actual physical signature that they understood the tampering rules. And so given the NHL's interest in trying to cut down on some of that and the sort of longer history of also Jim Benning being fined in Vancouver for tampering, I wouldn't be surprised to see the league phoning Jim Rutherford to advise him that that was inadvisable.
Yeah, it's funny too, because the Canucks were complaining about other teams tampering with their players earlier this season, but here we are. And it kind of goes in line with one of the themes of what they had to say today, and that is they're looking to trade for a center, which what number are you in the line? Because I know a lot of teams are looking for a top 24? Six center, but they seem pretty adamant that they're going to go as far as it takes to at least get that center, because they don't see it in free agency. What do you think that looks like this summer for the Vancouver Canucks?
It's going to be tough, but as Jim Rutherford said, not only is it going to be expensive, but it might be more expensive to not go out and do it. Mm-hmm. Here's ultimately the feeling that I left watching that press conference with, was that Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin did a really good job of helping set expectations for the market for the future. In other words, they recognize how difficult of a job that this is going to be, and they were essentially preparing the fan base today for what might be a pretty difficult summer and into next season. And some of those things happened through no fault of their own. And some of them did. Some of them were squarely on the personnel decisions that have been made over the last 18 months and beyond. And I kind of viewed that press conference as Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin basically saying, well, if we can pull a few rabbits out of our hat and we turn things around in short order, then great, they'll look like geniuses. And if not, they can sort of step back and halfway through next season say, hey, look, we told you so. Like, we told you that this was going to be really hard to do, and this is where this team stands at this exact juncture in time.
when also what the stakes are, that, you know, it may lead to Quinn Hughes not being here. And he may have a desire, regardless of their success or failure, to go and reunite with his brothers. And it was just, you know, again, jarring to hear it come from the president as overtly as it did. And on the front of the other guy, which is Elias Pettersson, and they said all the right things about supporting him and they believe in him. And then, you know, they want him to live up to his side of the bargain, that he's already working hard in the offseason. And at the same time, let the door open that they're not going to close any doors when it comes to making a trade. Do you take that as lip service because you always keep your options open? Or is your posture on Pettersson really an indication of there isn't really much of a market around there to trade him to begin with?
I don't think there was any posturing at all. I think that's exactly what the situation is. If they can find value for him, they'll try and find a way to move him. And I think what was more damning, if anything, was, look, Rick Tocchet has been kind of clear and hinted at this, if not more than hinted at, the preparation factor for Pettersson hasn't nearly been good enough. For the front office to then add to it and mention it very specifically today, I mean, that's an elementary thing. Like, we're talking about a professional hockey player and not an entry-level guy, not a rookie, not a kid, being roundly criticized for how he prepares and trains. Like, this is the most basic of things that we're talking about, that he's now signed to a $90-plus million contract and doesn't have that part of it figured out yet. That's highly alarming to me, that you could get to this point in your career. And I guess maybe the other side of the coin is that someone was so successful without having those fundamental building blocks and tenets in place. The other part of it, though, is Jim Rutherford saying that, like, you know, again, I'm paraphrasing, but there is no easy fix here. That it's not like Pettersson's going to wake up and snap his fingers and turn back into the 40-goal, 100-point player that we all saw with our own eyes. That it's going to take a grind and a grind factor that, frankly, he hasn't had to this point.
It is an interesting part of the whole thing because, you know, for as much as they went into little detail about the rift between Miller and Pettersson today, at one point, Jim did say, you know, part of what restarted the rift or reignited it was that Pettersson didn't show up as prepared to camp as they would have liked him to. And whether that was through injury or other reasons, it was the start of what became the first half storyline of the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, it makes it a hard position to come back from. And I just wonder if with everything that's gone on, like, can this work in Vancouver? That's ultimately, I don't know if they have a choice, Frank, but I just don't know how this is going to work here.
Yeah, they didn't exactly hold back today, did they? Like, they didn't prop him up and dust him off and say, hey, this is our guy, come hell or high water. And they didn't provide any sort of glowing remarks about where he is and their optimism for the future. And I'm not saying they should have. It's just that some teams in settings like that go out of their way to do it, even if they don't even believe it. And so that part, I think, certainly raises, you know, causes you to raise an eyebrow. And I think the other thing that is totally, well, it's not totally unrelated, but a little bit unrelated to that, is that, you know, when you think back to the rift between these two players, I do think that part of how it got too deep and how it became something that they couldn't recover from was that, and I don't know that anyone's going to say this part out loud either, is that I think they gave Miller the green light to push Pettersson. That they felt like, as one of the leaders on the team who had found success based on the style that he plays and how he goes about his business, that maybe they thought that there would be mentor is not the right word, but maybe that they'd find some way to have what Miller does and how he goes about his business rub off on Pettersson. And if not, even just ignite him. And I think at some point, everyone just got a little bit wrapped up in what may or may not have come with that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we don't have to relitigate the entire JT Miller stuff. And I think, you know, as more time goes on, I think there will be more detail that emerges, just like you kind of mentioned there too. And we'll see what the full picture looks like. But, you know, just circling it back before we wrap things up on the Canucks side of things at the very least, but it all comes down to replacing JT now. It comes down to finding that type of player. And I don't see a player on the market right now, and perhaps things can change, and they will change between now and July 1st and even, you know, after the Stanley Cup final is over. But, like, who are going to be the types of centers that are available that can, at the very least, approximate the value of a top-line center or second-line center, let alone replacing JT outright?
I'm not seeing it from a top-line perspective. Maybe you could find a 2C out there that you hope could grow. But I don't think there's a reasonable facsimile. I don't think there's a reasonable replacement that exists right now at this moment in time. And that's just an honest answer.
Yeah, they made it pretty clear that that's probably not going to be available in free agency. Maybe the best comp is Sam Bennett, but he only gives you like 60% of the production value that JT Miller gave.
The closest thing is probably Brock Nelson, and he's 33 years old, and I don't know if Vancouver is very high on his list.
Yeah. So that's the trouble the Canucks find themselves in. Tom Vilander, still a stalemate there, and now you're getting into the a little bit of the negotiating through the media. Patrick Alvin saying that they've been told he's going back to school. The agent coming back saying that's not necessarily true. What's your read on where this is and why it's gotten so ugly?
It's a great question. There's a lot of spin cycle happening right now. I can tell you that there is this, like, and I need to remind you that this is a mostly formulaic, basic contract. There's Schedule A bonuses, Schedule B bonuses, and those all get mashed together into what you would call the performance bonus portion of the contract that, in all likelihood, although other players of his tier and draft position do earn those in their contract, have it written in, most of them, the majority of them, go without being earned in real cash. And so part of the push and pull here, if the Canucks are true to their word, and Jim Rutherford said it, every indication is to this point in time that they're going to be a cap team, the performance bonus portion of the contract actually matters because you have to account for it. And so until it's not achieved or until it's unachievable, it's on your cap and it has to be factored into the equation. So the Canucks, I believe, have pushed back and said, look, most of these don't get actually earned anyway. Let's not do them and let's get a deal done. And the Willander camp has said, yeah, but what if we do achieve those? We want those. We want to be able to have the ability to earn that extra money because entry-level contracts are capped out. I get it from both sides. What happens next for Willander? I believe in the end, no matter what, whether it's in Vancouver or whether it's in Europe, I think he's turning pro. I believe and know that there's a deal to be done. It depends on who's going to relent first.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fascinating. Usually you don't see entry-level contracts get to this type of standstill or stand off, and we'll see where it leads.
Almost never.
No, and I mean, and I'm not going to sit here and be dramatic and say it's going to lead to a trade, but usually that's how this happens. You have this type of standoff, and eventually it goes down a poor path, but I still think there is at least hope that you know, cooler heads or whatever prevail here the next few weeks. It just seems like a stupid thing to delay somebody's arrival in the NHL over.
I couldn't say it better than the last few words that you just did. Yeah. Seems like an unnecessary back and forth for a guy that should be a pretty valuable player.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on it. And if it wasn't for Jim Rutherford, was the biggest quote of the day what Dylan Larkin had to say when meeting with the media, that the Red Wings, they lost a lot of desire after a bad trade deadline? Was that a shot at their general manager or a player just being honest?
Probably both. I'd say that's about as vocal of criticism, and he did try and be measured when you watch the clip in his, I guess you would call it criticism. Like, you're not going to hear many players speak out toward their general manager in that fashion, the way that Larkin did today. However, I also see it from a slightly different angle, which is you have to earn a trade deadline addition to your team. A general manager is only, especially one that's been through a rebuild, is only going to give up precious future pieces when he's absolutely convinced that your team has the goods to make it. And part of that's on Steve Yzerman, because he didn't do a good enough job putting that team together to be a playoff team, and not having someone like Filip Hronek, who fit their age scheme because you lost three games in a row and traded him a few years ago. Stuff like that has come back to haunt them in a big way on their blue line. And so part of it's on the general manager. Part of it is on the players for not playing better to earn a trade deadline acquisition. And part of it is just a lot of whining about nothing.
Yeah, and it's tough times in Detroit, tough times in Seattle down the I-5. Ron Francis up as GM. Jason Botterill is going to be up as president now, and Jason Botterill's taken over as GM as per reports. And Dan Bylsma is out. Hasn't been a good time in Seattle since their playoff appearance a couple of years ago now. What do you make of today's changes and what's to come after, you know, they spent a lot in free agency last year, but it had nowhere close to the desired effect?
Yeah, and spent a pretty considerable amount on Dan Bylsma, too. Last year gave him a 3-year deal, and he's out after one. I think it shows the urgency that the Kraken have to try and get it right. I think it's not really that surprising. There were rumblings of this going back to September. In fact, if you go back to my 32 bold predictions article from October 7th, that was one of the 32, was that Ron Francis would be promoted to president and Jason Botterill would take over as GM. So it's been out there for a little while. I think it also speaks to the way too conservative nature in which Ron Francis built this team. He had options in front of him for star players, or relatively star players who might have been a little bit older, to come with a better team right out of the gate in the expansion draft. He passed up on a few of those bigger names. He went with a very patient approach, young players, draft picks, and then had a very surprising season and didn't do much to improve the team on top of that, thought that it would just be a linear progression, and then went and spent a ton in free agency last summer, and they're now longer term committed with a little bit of an older team that doesn't appear to be going anywhere fast because they don't have any difference makers. So if you were going to truly be conservative, then be a bad team and give yourself as many opportunities as possible and get impact players in the draft. And instead they've kind of been in the NHL's no man's land for the last few years. I don't really understand what their plan is and how they rectify it.
Yeah, it's troubling to see what's happened down there. Frank, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Thank you, guys. Have a good week.
There he is. Frank Saravalli on Sports at 650, brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Spring into savings at Angry Otter Liquor. Save $4 off White Claw, Big Surf Variety, 12 packs. More at angryotterliquor.crs. Didn't even get a chance to get into some of the playoff discussion with Frank. We'll do that a little bit later on in the program, but a lot still to get to, including the general manager of your Vancouver Canucks. Patrick Alvin joins us next on Sportsnet 650.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans, The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.